going to try to be brief. I know we're running late, as we always do, and that's one of the reasons why I use the slides, because I think they tell a story faster than I can talk. I'm going to touch on these subjects, and you'll see them one by one, so we don't need to dwell on that. First thing will be finance and the reserves, the status of the reserves. First slide there is we did end 2008 with another net revenue plus. I believe that's 10, 11 years in a row, and slightly higher from the year before, primarily reflecting a very good Portland conference and a very good PCORA conference. In fact, that total stack on the right-hand side is almost totally made up of those two factors. So congratulations to those who were involved in those conferences, and the society really does benefit from that kind of activity. This is just to give you a feel for the breakout, and you can see that something like 42% of our income comes from meetings. That's one of the reasons why the meetings are so important to us. Another point I would make with this chart, if you look at the pie at the bottom there, the quadrant, the 18% at the bottom, that's dues. If you believe that you benefit from all parts of the society's activities, meetings, publication, certification, outreach, public policy issues, etc., you're getting about $5 of benefit for every dollar you spend as dues. So that's the point to be made with that sliver of the pie. Basically, it shows where everything else comes from in order to make up our income. On the expense side, meetings is high, and in fact, a component of salaries belongs with meetings, as well as a component of printing belongs with meetings, so that, in fact, meetings are more than just 23%, but they don't make up the whole 42% that was on the slide before, and that thus the net. Our funds are invested. They say that anybody had a 401k when this started now has a 201k. I'm hoping today will be a little bit like yesterday, and maybe we'll get back to 207 or something like that k. But anyway, the reserves funds and the foundation's funds that were invested have been affected by the issues with the economy. Now, we do use a very defined strategy, and in the case of both of them, there's still funds going into them even as the market has fluctuated, so that the downturn in the chart is not quite as severe as it would be if you were just plotting, say, the Dow or the S&P. But clearly, we took a turn away from our goal. Goal is still to be defined. I think we're getting closer to that definition. But nevertheless, we're further from it than we were a year ago, even with the positive revenue we had this last year. Some people would say, why do you need to reserve at all? And if you look down that list, and we've used it for publications to backstop, we've taken risks on conferences. I mentioned that the annual conference has done very well over 10 years. The fall conference, we take more risks on. But nevertheless, we use it for new initiatives and others. But really, right now, it's backstopping us against the general economy. And in fact, we couldn't have made and felt comfortable making the budget we did for 2009 had we not had the reserves sitting there as of 2008. We would have had to be much more conservative, either talked about some kind of dues increase, or we would have had to talk about some kind of cut in services just to feel confident we could make it. But we, because we have a reserve, we can keep on going, and hopefully, if this year turns out like this meeting has turned out, I think we'll be just fine. Headquarters building. A year ago, I talked about the fact that there was a possibility that the center upon which the building sits may be sold. And we occupy a quarter of the Glasscock building, and RNRF has a building on that site, so does the Society of American Foresters, total of about 39 acres. And that sale was actually in work at last summer, and then the economy hit, and there will be no sale. The potential buyer has gone completely away. They not only shut down their activities in the D.C. area, but they shut down their activities elsewhere, including Manhattan, et cetera. So we don't have any potential for sale of that property on the books at this point. And that's a totally dead issue, I think, as far as I'm concerned, as far as I can see, anyway. Wards in the foundation, I just mentioned that we've been affected in the foundation slightly. If you look at the three bars, and not every ward has three bars because some are brand new, like the Barrens. But if you look at the 3 years, and you'll see these are a percent of goal, and there's been some adjustment. For instance, the Caldwell Fellowship backed up a little bit between the 2007 and 2008 simply because we increased the size of a ward. Okay, but between 08 and 09, you can see what was essentially the effect of the investments and the market. And so we are further away from our goal than we were last year. We were up about 85%, 83 to 85% of our goal last year, and we're now about 78%. So the economy, even as we continued to get donations, and they've come along pretty well, plus we got, like I say, the Barron's Award and the Wolf, the money for the Wolf, the increased Wolf Award and so forth came in. The Anson Award came in. We are a little further away from where we want to be. And again, a similar kind of a dip in the chart. Not as severe as the stock market, simply because of the way we have the funds invested and because we continue to get income, which has counteracted some of the decline. And again, that goal is a little more defined because it's defined as fully endow all of our non-pass-through awards and scholarships, and that's where we would need to be to do that. Still within striking distance, and with some help from the market and another couple of years of good, solid contributions, and we'll get there, but nevertheless, we took a sideways turn. Publications, Cass just mentioned these, and I'll show you what they look like. They're not yet published, but hopefully within a matter of a couple of months, we're going to have two brand new volumes or manuals, the manual of GIS, and which you see on the left, and then we've converted what was a CD as a volume one of the third edition of the manual of remote sensing has been converted into a book. And based on the recommendations of the task force that Cass mentioned, that will be the last activity for the third edition. And anything future we do on the manual of remote sensing will be related to the fourth edition. That requires board approval, but that'll be on the docket for Friday. Just a couple words on membership. We slipped last year for the first time since about 2003. It's not a huge slip, but nevertheless, it's a bummer. And it puts us somewhere where we were probably in 2002, 2001. But we had been on an upward trend, and I think we call on everybody to redouble efforts to try to turn that back around. That's probably going to be a little bit challenging in today's environment, but hopefully we can still do that. Now, lastly, I want to touch, just because this is the 75th anniversary, a couple things on the how we got where we are. July 29th, 1934, 12 folks sat around a dining room table in this house. This house still exists. I went down and took this picture just within the last 10 days or so in Northwest D.C. And around this table, this table still exists, and in fact, that's our conference table in our headquarters office. That was the Redding, Captain Redding's house, and the Redding family eventually donated that table to the society, and we use it as a conference table, and created the society. Here we are 75 years later, a little different look on the logo. I'll mention the logo just a little bit again in a moment, in a building that looks like this. So this is sort of in a nutshell where we were and where we are now. It's very interesting to go back, and once they're up on the web, they're, like I say, they're all scanned, but once they're up on the web, I think everybody will be intrigued to go back and read at least the first year's worth of notes, news notes. Very interesting to see what was going on. But immediately, the night of the 29th of July, they agreed that they were going to begin meeting periodically every several months, and they were going to exchange information on problems, display maps and photos, and give each other the benefit of the other's experience. Sounds like what we're doing today, right here as we sit or as we walk around in the exhibit hall, etc. They had an immediate intent to join the International Society of Photogrammetry. And in fact, in that first issue, they have a tabulation of all the different countries that were in the society and how many people there were. I think the maximum was Germany and 200 and some and members. And they didn't say it in their notes, but I believe they set out to become the largest organization in ISPRS very quickly. They had a plan, and you'll see in another slide, to translate technical papers. At the time, there was a lot of the work was being done in something other than English. Now we take it for granted that pretty much everything's done in English, so that's sort of a relic of the time period. To publish news and technical reports and papers on new methods, and we're doing that today. And an interesting note, and that was that Captain Redding was the temporary chairman because he was the host of the meeting. It was his house. And Mrs. Redding was going to serve refreshments. That's all in there as well. But with the understanding that Colonel Birdseye would accept the first presidency when the society was organized. So that was their thought at the very first meeting. They knew what they were going to do once they got going. And these are the people who were there. And there were a couple of others who were invited but weren't able to make it. And I put an asterisk by those who eventually served as presidents of the society. But you'll recognize a number of those names. They, by the 2 months later, this is in July, so by September, they already had their first ASP news notes out, and they had already defined the structure of the organization. And if you look down the left side, the first five, with the exception of translations, are committees that you'll recognize today. And then they began what a list of committees that I would say are comparable to our divisions, okay? But right away, what they were designing, we have. Nothing has significantly changed, and that's what's really striking to go back into that material. They set the dues at $3. They had a big debate, $3 or $5. Okay, the $3 debate won out. Now, it wasn't very long before they were moving it up, but nevertheless. And they immediately said membership recruitment was a priority. Does that sound familiar? They decided to have a contest to design a logo, and they decided they would give that person $5. So we now know what the price of the original logo was, $5. And that logo was used for, 50 years or thereabouts, till we became ASPRS. So the first annual meeting was scheduled, and it was held then in April of 35. And if you look at their program, it's, again, very similar to what we're doing here. And at that meeting, Colonel Birdseye was installed as president. And then they had a concern, and the concern is that they were somewhat overburdened by government men. It was all probably men at the time, and they needed to fix that problem. And in fact, and I don't have it in my list, but very early on they decided to rotate the officers and to rotate expectation in the committees and so forth, so there would be academics and commercial as well as government people involved. That tradition still goes to today. They held a semi-annual meeting in the fall of 35 in Dayton, Ohio. So they quickly decided that they weren't going to do everything in Washington. And by then, they were talking about a library membership, which is really our subscriptions, a sustaining membership, which were the commercial folks, companies, although there were some universities and other institutions who wanted to become sustaining members. They established the honorary member category, and of course we recognized our most recent honorary member today, Dr. Lillisan. They immediately started talking about a student membership category, but they had to go through a process to get to that. That wasn't immediately adopted. And by 35, they were already having regional, and they didn't call them a region at the time, but regional activities outside, and the first focus of those was Chattanooga, where a lot of work was going on, obviously, at TVA. The first obituary, which is now the In Memoriams, were published in 35. And every issue has technical papers. There's not one that doesn't have math and tables, and you can learn a lot about what the technology was back then, many with illustrations. And I'll get to an interesting thing in a moment on one of those. By the end of the first full year, they already had a problem with dues being in arrears. So, okay, now just a little bit about the publication that started out as News Notes of ASP in 34. It became a quarterly in 36. In 36, the July issue carries a color image. It's actually an anaglyph. So it's blue and red, and the little glasses are there, glued to the back in a little fold, in a little envelope. So that's how far advanced they were at that point. Obviously, it was an insert. It wasn't mimeographed like everything else was, but by October, December, they changed the name to Photogrammetric Engineering, and it stayed that for many years. By 39, the April, June issue, it carries the first advertising, and on the back of that is Kodak, And Kodak stayed on there until the early 1990s, so more than 50 years. Every single issue had a Kodak ad on the back. By 1957, they had an image on the front of the issue. In 61, they went from quarterly and added a yearbook. And in 63, it went to six. And in 67, it became monthly. And in August of 67, the first color image was used on the cover. Up to that point, they'd all been black and white. And in 75, in advance of us changing our name, the journal was renamed PENRS. And in 92, and then this one's near and dear to me because I was directly involved in making this happen, along with probably Alan McCooney and George Lee's not here, but we carried literally a digital file in the published issue. It's a 5 1/4. Remember, anybody remember 5 1/4 floppies? They were real floppy. And it had a ortho image produced by Brian Logan and his folks of the U.S. Capitol building. In 96, the first time we were able to publish or post issues online, and hopefully, as I mentioned earlier, by the end of this year, we will have all issues, including all the way back to the 1934 news notes, which most people only have access to if you go into the library like we have, will be online. So I would ask you, remind you to visit the history display in the foyer. This is, I liken it to Kim Tilley's senior project. She's worked her tail off along with Russ Congleton and the committee that kind of strategized it. I think they did an outstanding job in that, preparing that, and as well as designing a celebration appropriate to 75 years. So thank you. See you next year in San Diego.